This final day of the October board meeting. We're going to start with the topic of subsidiaries that are SMEs, and would like to give the floor to Elizabeth.
Thank you, Hans. Good morning, good afternoon. So today we're seeking your views on four matters, and these are listed in paragraph 5 of the paper. The first issue, we ask whether you agree that subsidiaries that are applying the reduced disclosure IFRS standard should be required to disclose that they are applying that standard. And if so, whether you agree that that statement should be located with the compliance statement required by IS1. I'll introduce the next topic after you've voted on questions 1 and 2, which are on the compliance statement questions. So I will stop now and invite your comments.
Does anybody wish to speak? No. Tadeo.
Yes, thank you, Hans. In relation to the application of the reduced disclosures, I thought first that it could be similar to what we have in IS 34. But after some discussion with some other people involved with the paper, I think that it does make sense looking at the proposal as if we are assuming that the reduced disclosure is fully based on materiality judgment, especially considering the primary users would be similar to one using for an entity using IFRS for SMEs. And then therefore, the reduced disclosure is like doing in advance a materiality judgment in terms of disclosures. Looking from this perspective, I think that I believe that the staff recommendation is reasonable. Thank you.
Sue.
Thanks, Hans. I agree with the staff recommendation. I think we're making a lot of sort of very careful decisions about when there would be less disclosure applying this reduced disclosure standard. But the consequence is obviously that there will be some information that won't be available that would have been if somebody wasn't applying that standard. And I think it's really important that people using the financial statements, you know, are on notice that that's the case. And so I think I agree with the staff recommendation because I think it achieves that sort of signalling to users of the financial statements.
Bruce?
Thanks, Hans. I was just going to say I also agree with the staff recommendation. I mean, to me, kind of full IFRS has always really been the gold standard. And I think that we've got to accept that that's what people would look to and say, if you've prepared it under IFRS, we expect everything to be there. Having worked through the paper, not really convinced that in my mind this would be an accounting policy choice. To me, this is a bit more than an accounting policy choice. I mean, this is a fundamental decision around almost a different framework. I mean, as much as this, yes, it's the same as the large framework, it's a different way in which we're giving all the disclosures in terms of what people would expect to see. And I like the analysis in the paper that kind of spoke about the fact that if we had two subsidiaries, one doing full IFRS and one not, we're going to get different answers. And anybody using those sets of financial statements is clearly going to see very different disclosures in those. So to me, it's more than an accounting policy choice. I do like the idea that we're stating that I mean, the debate I then had was, is this more like an IS 34 where we've got to say, well, hang on, actually, we're not preparing it under IFRS. Kind of having worked through that in my mind, I to be honest, I probably started there, but then coming back, I said, no, I think I'm happy for us to say we can still got the we are still within kind of IFRS land, but I think what the staff have recommended is right. We need to make that disclosure in a place where people would see it to say we have not complied in full with this, and we've elected to do it on that. So on that basis, I'd support what the staff have said.
Françoise.
quality of a debate is when different views are expressed. And I certainly have a different view. I think that this is an accounting policy choice. And I think if we need to really check and make sure that we all agree about what we're doing. If we, my understanding and the basis on which I make my assessment is that we have come to the conclusion that the uses of financial statements prepared by subsidiaries, which are SMEs as we've defined them, we have come to the conclusion that that set of disclosure is what users need. So in my view, we have not tried to reach, for whatever reason, a different cost-benefit balance than we usually do, and that this cost-benefit balance would be at the detriment of users. And if that was in the background of our mind, I think I would not be in favor. I'm in favor of this because we, given the who the users of these financial statements are, we are convinced, like we are for the IFRS for SMEs, that with the disclosure requirements that we set, we provide the basis for sound disclosures to users of financial statements. And if we conclude that we need to warn people in the statement of compliance that it's the entity complies with IFRS, but not quite, I think we bring a qualification, not only on a statement of compliance, that I don't think needs to be the case, but in fact on the work we do. We say, oh, beware that you're not going to have what you should have. And if we were in the need for that warning, again, I would be against what we're doing. I also think that when we leave accounting policy choices open, we expect people to make the better choice. And if we are right in what we are doing, I think all the work we've done on materiality lately would lead us to think that if an entity were to comply, such an entity were to comply to all requirements, provide all the notes, as if it had the same primary uses as a listed company, it would probably provide immaterial information. Of course, as for any entity, the necessary disclosures, those that are material to users, should be provided beyond eventually the list that we provide. But that's the same specific materiality assessment that any entity should do, whether it's listed or whether it's not, and taking into account all disclosure requirements. So I think it seems to be a small decision to make, but to me this decision, if we think that we have to warn people that they might not have what they need, sheds light to us having a potentially a different view of what we're really accomplishing.
Rika.
Thank you, Hans. I support staff proposal, and first of all, I think the standard with full IFRS recognition and measurement requirement with reduced disclosure will have new users of IFRS. So I think there is a potential, a lot of potential within this framework. So I think the group of people who will use this reduced disclosure standard are the user of the financial statement of the those financial statements prepared based on the reduced disclosure standard, will be some overlap between the user of the full IFRS as well as the SME, but I also think there will be a different user of the financial statement prepared based on the this new reduced disclosure standard. So I think it is really important to include a clear statement within the financial statement and sitting next to the requirement of the paragraph 16 of IS-1. And I also think from the auditor's perspective, if there is no clear statement within the financial statement, the first place that statement will appear will be audit report. So in that case, maybe auditor need to ask the company to include such statement without any requirement in the standard. So I really think that's unnecessary process for auditors and the company work on. So I agree with the staff recommend here.
Sure.
I think that the perspective that Françoise gave is interesting because it's quite different to the way that I've been thinking about it. And so the way that she articulates it's, I think, really helpful for the debate. Because the way that I've been thinking about it is slightly different. So when I've been looking at the disclosures proposed for the reduced disclosure regime, I've been doing it on the basis that we are sort of making a decision about what we are concluding is the appropriate set of required disclosures for this particular population, these subsidiaries that are SMEs, and that therefore for that population we're concluding that it would be appropriate for them to make this choice. And so in that sense, I was not envisaging a model where we would be thinking that entities would need to make a sort of decision from a materiality or other perspective about whether in fact they should upgrade to or justify the choice to use the reduced disclosure standard, but rather if they met the criteria, they would be perfectly entitled to use that without thinking about it in the way that you would an accounting policy choice. And because of that, that would mean that you could have circumstances. So we're carefully crafting the disclosures so that we expect that it would be the case that the information necessary for the primary users of this population will be provided. But I think it's not impossible that there could be situations where for a particular entity, there could be information that would be interesting for investors that would be required by full IFRS, but not by this reduced disclosure standard. In that case, I think it is important for investors to be aware that just because the information isn't there doesn't mean that it may not be material. It may rather be a consequence of the difference between the disclosure requirements of the two standards. So if I take that perspective, that's why, for me, I would agree with the staff recommendation.
Françoise, you wanted to come back in?
Just to clarify a point, to me, when I say it's an accounting policy choice, of course, there is a disclosure. Following what we've done in the late amendments, I mean, when you have a choice of accounting policies, of course, you disclose. So it's not as if that was not mentioned. My difference is about the location.
Okay. Jen Chow.
Thank you, Hans. I agree with staff's proposal. I think there are two information we are talking about. One is about the reduced disclosure. The information reduced the disclosed information. And when we decided those reduced the disclosed information based on the criteria we decided with the board decided before, and also maybe materiality still apply, and also because those subsidiaries are SMEs, so maybe users focus, for example, creditors focus a little bit different, something like that. All those principles still apply. Another information we are talking about is that whether those subsidiaries needed to provide additional information to disclose the fact that the company, the subsidiary, actually are applying, you know, the reduced disclosure IFI standards. That information, whether do have value to the users or not. I'm thinking about if without disclosing the fact of this kind of information, I think maybe the users will think that that company actually fully comply with IFI's standard. That's full disclosure requirements, all of them. But actually, the company actually disclose less information than other companies. So I think that information actually do have value to the users, do I think Sue mentioned before, there is a signal that to try to provide this kind of signal can be helpful to users. I think Bruce also mentioned this kind of point. So I think from users' perspective, to make it, this information clear, I think it's very important. And also, it can help users to distinguish those entities who apply these reduced disclose standards as well as from other companies. So from my point of view, I think there is information content in this regard. Thank you.
Okay, can I see who supports the staff's recommendation?
Zach would have come.
Oh, Zach? Oh, yeah. Sorry, Zach, I missed you.
I'll be quick. I just wanted to follow on to that and say, I think from a user perspective, knowing that a company has made a choice to use a reduced disclosure regime is very important. It gives them the opportunity to discuss that decision. And so including that is fairly important so that they know first that there are reduced disclosures and can have a discussion about why that occurred, if something's missing that they'd like to see.
Okay, can I see who supports the staff recommendation?
Froze, or my whole screen is frozen. So if somebody else could count the votes, that would be great.
I think it's 12.
Okay.
All right. Please continue, Elizabeth.
May I, Hans?
Yes, Françoise.
I, of course, fully respect the decision that we just made. But I think I would really welcome that we, before we complete these proposals, that we have a discussion, of course prepared in advance, where we think again about what we're doing, that we really qualify what we're doing, because I think it's important, you know, if the full disclosure is considered as an upgrade, as a better thing, then we need to explain why users of those financial statements could go with our approval to less. I think it seems a very small decision where to locate this disclosure. But we need to fully explain what we're doing. I would want users to be confident that we're not making the wrong decision by setting that new standard.
Well, I'm sure that can be done one way or another. We have that internal discussion quite thoroughly. So I'm sure we can find a Elizabeth, did you want to say something? But I'm sure we can find a place to explain why we feel this is necessary. Yeah.
Michelle?
Yeah, so maybe the answer will be when we bring the due process paper that we have that discussion and outline in that paper as we make the final decision.
Yeah. That should be a good opportunity. Okay, Elizabeth, please continue.
Before Elizabeth does, Mary, could I just come in on one point following up on Francoise's remark, which is,
sure.
I think that we have thought hard about the needs of users in the context of the entity being an SME. And the point that she is, that I think a point that's related to what Francoise is raising rather than directly that point is making sure that people like market regulators are aware and thinking about the implications of this, because I could see a market regulator saying, if an entity wants to list, then should we say that they, you know, let's say a subsidiary that is an SME that use the reduced disclosure regime, or that use the SME standard, the IFRS for SMEs, would they take those financial statements as historical information as a basis for listing? We comment on that in the IFRS for SME, but I don't recall, Elizabeth, whether or not we comment about that in the scope for this standard. So maybe when you, I think that the suggestion about doing it when we have the due process makes sense, but maybe think about, it isn't giving them a caution, just making sure we flag that so when we expose anything that they can think about that and comment about the use of these financial statements.
Okay. Okay, Elizabeth.
Sorry, it's...
Tom. Okay, Tom. Yes.
Sorry, because we're in the. I didn't use the written. Just following on Francoise. I just have one or two small concerns about that we're not locking ourselves in completely as we go on, and I don't know the answer to this because it just occurred to me as I've listened. But one of the issues when I think about the guidelines or the IAS 8. It really talks about making policy choices on the basis of materiality. And what this choice has to do to me is much more of a cost-benefit trade-off, that when we started it, we said there are significant costs to making these disclosures, and there was a sense that they weren't really necessary for a subsidiary. So cost was more involved in our initial thinking than purely a materiality discussion. And as we go down the road, and one of the things we thought about picking up at the end was also, could this be extended to non-subsidiaries? I think this sort of distinction might become even more important. So I just kind of want to echo what Francoise said, is that we ought to just make sure we fully understand any sort of constraints or implications that we're throwing up as we go through this for any decisions we're making today.
Okay, any more questions? Because otherwise Elizabeth is going to continue. Elizabeth, please. You're on mute. Still on mute.
Michelle, can you take over if Elizabeth can't be heard?
Michelle is on mute as well. Are we all on mute except for me and Sue? That will make the meetings a lot speedier.
I can take over if Elizabeth can't be heard. So the next section, we want to talk about ISA accounting policies and accounting estimates and errors. So we were originally planning to take the disclosure requirements in Section 10 of the IFRS for SME standard and adapt them to IFRS 8. But when we started doing the work, we decided that the extent of changes would be such that it would just be simpler and easier for subsidiaries that are SMEs to apply IAS 8 alone, and that we would not give any exemptions. So our intention at the moment, subject to the board's approval, is that when we produce the exposure draft for a reduced disclosure standard, we would reproduce all the disclosure requirements that will apply to subsidiaries. And we would list the paragraphs in IFRS standards in an appendix that don't apply, And that finally, we'd list the paragraphs in other IFRS standards that contain JASTROSA requirements that remain effective. Therefore, if the board agrees with the staff recommendation, the intention is to have nothing in the first two sections, i.e. the disclosure requirements in the standard, and no exemptions from IFRA. And then for the last one, we would include the ISA remaining disclosures. So with that, I would like to hand over to the board, as we'll take this comments on this section of the paper before we move on. So if we could move to question three, please.
All right. Anybody? No takers? Okay, then I assume that we agree with the staff. Oh, Tom, yes.
I have a question.
Tom.
So just if we do this one, let me sort of get it up here. I apologize. Sorry. No. Okay, I'm all right. Sorry, I thought I had a question. I apologize.
Anne?
I'm okay.
Thanks, Hans. Michelle, I'm not clear whether what the principle is that we're using here. We in the next section we start talking about referencing out. So when we're doing the transition requirements, we're talking about referencing out. So I'm not clear here, as we're dealing with IAS 8, whether we have a principle or whether we're just being expedient here. Look, in your intro, you said that you thought it was simpler to just apply IAS 8 requirements, and I understand that, and I understand what you said in the paper. Does that mean that the text of IAS 8 requirements appears within IFRS XX, or does it mean there's just a cross-reference? That's my question.
So I think we could do it either way, because obviously we haven't got to the point where we're reproducing them. But what we had thought about as staff was how to make it the most simpler for subsidiaries that are SMEs to apply. So I think we would see this as the disclosure requirements of IFRS 8 would remain applicable. So we could just say in the appendix, this disclosure requirements of IFRS 8 remain applicable, or we could list the paragraphs, whichever we ultimately think is easier. In terms of, have we applied the kind of principles that we applied where we said we're only making adaptions where recognition and measurement change, I think we explained in the paper that what we did here was we said, this isn't a recognition and measurement difference. It's a difference in the way the two sets of the IFRS for SME standard and full IFRS standards are maintained. And that makes the requirements not, they don't really match. The way a recognition and measurement difference doesn't really match. So we needed to do something different.
Yeah, that's fine. So you've touched on my point, which is about, are we going to cross-reference to IAS 8, or are we going to include the text? And I think you're saying we haven't actually decided that yet. Is that right?
I don't think we need to decide that yet. But I think
not yet.
Yeah.
But at some point we need to decide, because there's, we do hear from people that some people who are using reduced disclosure regimes find it easier to have everything in one booklet. Everything in one standard, not cross-referencing to a different standard. But what you've told me is we're going to discuss that later, so that's fine. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, we certainly want to have all of the disclosure. We want to be very clear in that standard. These are the disclosure requirements you have to apply. These are the disclosure requirements you no longer have to apply. And then the IFRS 8 one, we have to make a decision on.
Mary?
Thanks, Hans. Anne's comment, or a comment that was in Anne's question, not Anne's question itself, just prompted a comment that I wanted to make about our approach. Anne talked about how we have kind of a framework identifying the very limited circumstances in which we will make a change from the disclosure requirements in the IFRS for SME standard, you know, when as we're developing the standard IFRS XX. And my comment is to say I think we have good criteria in terms of when we make the change, and I think it's absolutely the right screening and sorting tool to use when we're trying to take the whole of IFRS standards and think about them in their interaction with the disclosures in the IFRS for SMEs. But I'd also encourage the staff to think about not being too rigid in that, and I don't know whether that's, and that's with respect to both adding disclosures that may not be in the IFRS for SMEs or taking away something that may be in the IFRS for SMEs. This is a generic comment, not specific to any one proposal. I think it's absolutely the right screening tool, but then I think having the staff bring things to the board and say, okay, this is what applying our screening criteria suggests that we do. Here are the exceptions where we at least want to talk with you about whether we should vary it on the plus side or the minus side, and have it be a conscious decision rather than saying it's out of our hands, we just can't touch this because that's inconsistent with the principle. I think we as in the standard setting process have to think about whether or not there are variations that we should be proposing and getting feedback on based on our our assessment of the information needs of the users of financial statements for entities that are SMEs. And I think we should not move off that as the reference point. So that's just a general observation in terms of thinking about what the staff brings back.
Okay. So I think that's fair. I take the observation, and clearly, you know, people have had different views on how rigid we should be in applying those adapting the disclosure requirements or applying those principles. And we have, in response to all of the board members' comments, made available to all of the board members how we've responded to your comments, and we've highlighted the ones that we'll bring back to the board for further consideration. So, you know, if board members do have any comments or they don't agree with the items that we have screened out or not screened in, then please do let us know, and we'll try to bring them back to the board.
Tom?
Yeah, I do have a question now. It's funny, I apologize, because a lot of this was prompted by the earlier discussion and Bruce's comment that he didn't see this as accounting policy, and is his choice an accounting policy. So first, I guess one of the things I'd been operating under is that this standard is a part of IFRS, right? And it sucks in the IFRS for SMEs disclosure, but into IFRS. Is that correct, right?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you're sitting in IFRS if you're using this. And yes. And so presumably all the IFRS standards are applying unless we specifically say they don't apply, which is what this standard is essentially doing, right?
Only disclosure requirements. So all of the standards apply except for disclosures that will be listed in the reduced disclosure standard. Yes.
So that's what I'm saying. So anybody who's operating, we have to be very careful that in that opt-out standard, we have it precise.
Yes.
Otherwise, we're going to have kind of a mess at the end. And just on C, and this came from what Bruce said, if I think about this and suppose it's called a policy, I at one point was a rose by any other name, but now I'm not. If we call this a policy and suppose I start off not taking the option to disclose, so I'm a subsidiary, I don't take the option to disclose the reduced set. I'm just rolling along, disclosing normally. If I go to changes of accounting policy in IAS 8, I'm only allowed to do that change if the reduced disclosures essentially provide reliable and more relevant info. It's a hurdle that's, I think, virtually impossible. because it's basically a cost saving I'm generating. It's not more relevant information. What we're doing is we're going to save a whole pile of cost for the investors, and we're going to provide information that is probably not materially relevant, but certainly not, more relevant. It's, as I said, it's almost impossible. So I again come back. So I think that point again is this an accounting policy is may become very important. And it kind of goes to that question about sorting these things out really clearly about pecking orders. And a little bit, it was also prompted by Anne's question, just exactly what's a cross-reference and everything. And so if it's embedded in IFRS, I would say IFRS are there unless they're excluded. So I would just, as we go through, I'm really supportive of this thing. I just, in listening to everybody, I realize there may be a couple of things that we really need to be clear on as we go forward.
So, Tom,
I think some of the things that are coming up. Please. I think some of the things coming up now. I'm going to turn my camera off.
Go ahead, Michelle.
I think some of the things that are coming up now, Michelle, are sort of come back to the point that Francoise raised before, and I think we should cover them in the future paper, which we've already flagged as coming, because I think these are some really important points, because I think there's a big difference between a standard where we've said, as long as you're a subsidiary that's an SME, whatever our scope is, you can choose to apply this reduced disclosure regime. You don't have to prove your way into it. You don't have to prove that it's better than not applying it. It's just something we've decided for this population is appropriate, and you can choose to do it. That's one approach. Another approach is the one others are alluding to, which is more of you need to sort of provide some level of assurance that it's appropriate for you to apply the standard given your users, and it's appropriate for you to come or to go back out of it later. And they're two different, I don't think there's a right or a wrong, they're just two different approaches. And I think the account policy question, which Tom raises, is partly to do with this. But just to flag, really careful that we're going to have knock-on consequences across the whole book, because there's opinion in the market about where, if we have allowed policy choices as options in our standards, do you have to prove they're better or not through IAS8, or does the fact we've allowed a choice mean that you, if you qualify, you can just freely choose it without having to convince people that it's better than not doing so? And so just a caution that we don't trip up a whole load of other IFRS questions in addressing this. But I think it would be good to be explicit and to decide as a board which approach we intend, so that we're clear in the document we put out for comment and people can comment with the sorts of questions and perspectives that Mary raised earlier for regulators, et cetera, as well. So it's important, but I think it's all peeking ahead to that future paper.
Okay, Nick.
Thanks, Hans. I just wanted to comment on, I think, the direction which Tom was going, which was about the whole raison d'etre for having IFRS for subs, which are SMEs. And I think, you know, there's interesting dynamic here between reducing costs for payers and providing material information for users. But I think it's important this to remember that the user audience is distinctly different from full IFRS. And I'm not sure that we intend to or have indeed given up on materiality. I think we are certainly, through the work which we've done, reviewing the standards and deciding what could be dropped from this regime, I think our focus has distinctly been on materiality, but through the prism of a different set of users. So I hope that we're not giving up that, but at the same time, we can reduce cost for preparers. I think that's what we are seeking to do. Thank you.
Okay. Can I see whether we support the staff's recommendation? Question three. Okay. So, Elizabeth, have you restored your microphone?
I hope so. Can you hear me?
Yeah, but very faintly. Can you keep the microphone a little bit closer to your...
Yeah, better.
Not really. But go ahead. We can hear you.
Okay. I'll try shouting. So the thank you for that, and my apologies. So the next topic is transition provisions in other IFRS standards. So firstly, I just want to point out not all new standards have disclosure requirements specific to transition provisions. But when they do, those disclosures, quite rightly, are then very specific to those transition provisions and typically are only required for that 1 year, the first year that the standard is applied. The staff are therefore recommending that if a subsidiary that's a SME is applying the reduced disclosure standard, it applies for the first time a new IFRS, that it be required to comply with whatever disclosures about the transition provisions are included in that new standard, and that we don't have to import them into the reduced disclosure standard, because otherwise we'd be adding lots of disclosures that are relevant for a very short period of time. So I'll stop there to take your comments.
Tom?
Yeah, I completely agree. I just have, I think, one question. So if we did want to do something special for this group of subs, in the transition, there's nothing in passing this that would limit the board from saying, and transition provisions, if you're a sub, you know, you're excluded from item A or something. Is that correct?
Sorry, I've not quite... understood.
So if when we actually are writing new standard IFRS 30 and we do the transition provision, there's nothing to stop the board from having transition provision being slightly different for a sub that was eligible to use this in what we're passing. The board could say, if you're eligible for this, you can omit this particular disclosure as part of the transition provisions. So that's fine.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. I would expect the board would not want to change the transition provisions themselves for a sub that's a SME, but it might want to adapt the disclosure requirements about that, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Mary?
Just quickly, I support the staff recommendation because I think it's consistent. It flows from the same point we discussed earlier, that because the SME stand, the IFRS for SMEs, is updated as a package on a fixed schedule, and entities that would be using IFRS XX would be applying individual IFRS standards, which each have typically an extended implementation period and some flexibility about early adoption. I think assuming that the disclosure requirements come along makes sense, because the entities, as a result of the different approach to updating the body of IFRS standards versus the IFRS for SMEs, have different choices that the information about changes would be relevant to users of the IFRS subs that are SMEs standard. So I support the staff recommendation.
Anne?
Thanks, Hans. So Elizabeth, my questions around these words, subject to any modification that the board proposes. I think what you're trying to do here is to have a arrangement where you don't have to address transition requirements or every time you've got a statement within IFRS XX that says that the transition requirements of the full standards apply. But by putting in those words, subject to the modification, I assume what you're doing is retaining the fact that as the board considers the new standard and its relationship with IFRS XX, the board can then make changes if it needs to. So on the one hand, you're trying to have a blanket requirement to reduce the work, but on the other hand, there is the ability to make specific changes when the board looks at a specific standard. Have I understood that correctly?
Yes, if I've understood you correctly, yes. Yes, those words were specifically to capture the point Tom had, which I think is what you're saying. So when you as a board or drafting the transition provisions for IFRS 30 at some point in the future, you draft specific disclosure requirements on those transition provisions, you might want the ability to vary those disclosure requirements on the transition provisions for a sub on the reduced disclosure standard. So that was what those words were intended to mean. Whether there's a, I didn't particularly intend there to be a specific requirement in the reduced disclosure standard saying you will apply whatever transition disclosures are in individual standards, but we could look at that, and perhaps that might even be appropriate for the introduction to the standard or something, because there would be no exemption in the list of what a subsidiary that's a SME is, what disclosure requirements it's exempt from. There would be no exemption from the disclosure requirements on transition provisions, so therefore they would apply. But we could maybe say something in the introduction to the standard or in the basis for conclusions or something like that, to use that as an example.
Okay, Bruce.
Thanks, Hans. Just to clarify, I mean, in my mind, that section that was put in there is addressing one of the concerns I'd raised to the team, where my worry was that when we did a transitional provision for whatever standard it may be, we may dictate disclosures in there that the reduced disclosure framework has already excluded for a sub. So what ends up happening is a sub hasn't been giving disclosures now because there's transition, they've now got to give disclosures that they wouldn't normally have given. So, I mean, to me, that's why I thought this was this kind of addresses that well, because it says, look, if these disclosures have been excluded from the reduced disclosure framework, we don't want to overburden the subsidiary on transition when we've already said that those aren't relevant under this disclosure regime. So that's what that was addressing to me. I was just commenting on what everybody else had said.
Okay. Sue?
I agree with the philosophy you have here, but I guess I'd be cautious sort of tying our hands and sort of dictating that forevermore this is the approach we're going to take. I think it's completely sensible to sort of start off assuming that the normal transition disclosures would apply, but I would have thought that going forward, if we assume we've got a world where this new IFRS reduced disclosure standard exists and we're thinking about new standards coming in over time, in the same way that we sort of stop and think, okay, what does that mean for IFRS 1 first-time adopters? What does that mean, if anything, for IES 34 interim disclosures? We'd also want to stop and say, are we okay for this just to apply as normal to the people in the reduced disclosure regime, or do we need to do something specific? And we're just going to need to remember to do that check in the same way we do for IFRS 1, for interims and all sorts of other places. This would now be part of our regime, and we just need to be careful to make sure that we're making sensible decisions in the big book and the big full disclosures for this reduced disclosure regime, and it all fits together properly. So I'm not sure we need to, you know, be too prescriptive that we're definitely going to do it this way, which is making some people a little bit anxious. But the sort of design philosophy is, you know, starting assumption as usual would be normal disclosures apply, but let's just stop and make sure it makes sense. I think that's the essence of what you're proposing, isn't it?
Françoise?
Yes, thank you. In fact, I wanted to support what Sue just said. I came prepared being in agreement with the recommendation, but I would indeed wish it to mean what Sue has said.
And I saw Michelle nodding after what Sue had said, so I guess that's what the staff would think as well. Can I see who's in agreement with the staff's recommendation? Okay, very good. Then to the final question, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Hans, everyone. So the final question is combined financial statements. As we've explained in the paper, there are disclosure requirements for in the IFRS for SME standard for an entity that prepares combined financial statements. There are no such disclosure requirements in the full IFRS standards. And so, and if we apply the project objective, we should be bringing them into the reduced disclosure standard, but it appeared to staff quite odd to require a subsidiary that applies a reduced disclosure regime to actually give additional disclosures that it wouldn't be giving if it were not on the reduced disclosure regime. So our proposal is that that one paragraph of disclosure requirements that's in Section 9 of the IFRS, this new standard, is not included in the reduced disclosure standard. So turn the floor over to you.
Mary?
This is the staff recommendation I do not support, and it's a good example of what I was talking about before. I have a feeling that we're applying the I'll call it the rule of thumb, the operating rule for moving from the disclosure requirements in the full standards to the disclosure requirement in the IFRS for SMEs in a one-sided way, in the sense that if it's not required in the IFRS for SMEs, then we presume we should not be requiring it in the reduced disclosure regime. But then when it's required in the SME standard but not required in the full standards, we're saying, oh, that's burdensome, and we shouldn't. So it knocks out anything extra, and it doesn't pick up anything the other way. I think one of the things, and this is not the case with this combined issue, one of the things we have to be cautious about is whether something that appears to be extra in the SME standard is actually compensation for something that the SME standard decided to omit from a disclosure perspective that's in the full standard. And it may not be a one-to-one correlation, so there could be some indirect things that we have to think carefully about. But on this one with the combines, I think it is perhaps unique in our set of standards. And as I just stop and look at the disclosures in paragraph 44, that are recapped in paragraph 44 of this paper, I thought those are good, sensible disclosures to make if you are preparing combined financial statements. And why would we want to take them out? If anything, should we be thinking about a consequential amendment to IFRS standards to introduce these requirements from the SME standard into maybe IAS 1 basis of preparation if you're doing combined financial statements? I raise that, you know, we decided it when we finalized the conceptual framework that we would acknowledge the existence of combined financial statements as a possible approach that is not precluded by IFRS standards. We haven't done any standard setting to support that decision, and I'm not suggesting that we add a project to do that. But if this exercise has highlighted what seem to be very sensible disclosures to make if you are preparing combined financial statements, why would A, we want to get rid of it, and B, not think about at least incorporating it into our general disclosure standard? So that's why I don't support this specific recommendation.
Anne?
Thanks, Hans. My point was the thing I wanted to bring up, Mary's touched on some of it, and that was whether we are actually going to have a principle that you don't have more disclosure in the IFRS XX that isn't in full. And Mary gave a little bit of colour about circumstances where that might be useful. So my question was whether we're actually going to be silent on this as a principle, or we're going to adopt a principle, or whether we're just going to be case by case. The reason I bring it up is that we're spending a lot of time thinking about this. And if we lay down our thinking, it makes it easier for the people that come after us that are using the standard and working with the standard. So that's a question I leave with staff. Are we going to have a principle? I understand that the Australians adopted a principle, and the principle is they don't have any additional disclosure that isn't part of full. But Mary's given us an example where we might not want to do that. So my question to staff is, can we think about, are we going to be silent, or are we going to have a principle, or are we going to say case by case? Thank you.
Tadeu.
you, Hans. I support the staff recommendation because of the arguments included in paragraph 46. And I believe that if an entity prepares combined financial statements, even under full IFRS, they will need to do to make prepare some disclosures anyway. And it is likely that they will follow something similar to what we have in Section 9, following the IAS 8 requirements. I think that this is an IFRS standard. It's not IFRS for SME standard. And then I think that doesn't make sense bringing a guidance that is in IFRS SME, especially because, as I said, in practice, the disclosures will be there if an entity adopting the reduced disclosure IFRS or IFRS full prepare combined financial statement, they will need to disclose anyway. Thank you.
Françoise.
Yes, thank you. I have a lot of sympathy for what Mary has said. So to me, we should not, I mean, I would follow the staff recommendation unless we would conclude that those entities combine financial statements much more often than others do, or that their primary uses are so different that they would require this kind of disclosures when they don't. And I don't think, I'm not convinced that either one or the other applies. So from that perspective, I think that I approve the staff recommendation. Now, I would not be against what Mary suggests as having those disclosures incorporated in IFRS, and then that would also be in IFRS XX.
Martin?
Yeah, thanks, Hans. Man, I was a little bit confused by this question because I thought what we're discussing here is financial statements for entities which are subsidiaries. What is combined statements? Does then both entities, maybe should not be entities, but both be subsidiaries? And so I don't know what we're discussing here, because I think I thought we're discussing separate financial statements for SMEs which are subsidiaries, but not combined, because combined is, I don't know, do have them both entities be subsidiaries, or one is qualifying as a subsidiary, others not. So I think it complicates the whole thing, and I think we should not mention this in this kind of standard here. Okay.
Does the staff have a comment on this?
Martin, you're right. We're looking at subsidiaries, but some subsidiaries, for example, can still be required by their national legislation to produce, for example, consolidated financial statements. I understand these aren't. But therefore, I had thought that a subsidiary might, in some circumstances, be preparing combined financial statements, maybe of itself and just two of its recent, you know, that its operations from a particular division or something. So although we are discussing subsidiaries, they won't always be single entity financial statements. So I had thought it's still applicable.
Okay, but then my point is, okay, then maybe we should say, okay, if we should allow that, then at least both of the combined entities for which they prepare the combined financial statement should be subsidiaries, because otherwise I don't understand. Because we're doing that only for subsidiaries which are SMEs, but not for any other entities. At least we didn't have this discussion. For example, would it be allowed if a kind of a subsidiary which is an SME doesn't combine financial statements, which some entity which is not a subsidiary, would that qualify then for the reduced disclosure standard? We have not discussed that.
No.
And I think we should, if we're allowing that, we should discuss that at least, but not saying, okay, in any case, you can then use this reduced disclosure standard. At least if both qualify maybe as a subsidiary, mess, I would agree, but if only one is qualifying and the other not, I have my doubts if we should go this way.
Mary?
I just wanted to observe the more general point that I think we have to remind ourselves about, but also highlight in our consultation, which is that so far we have not planned to limit the application of IFRS XX to separate financial statements. You know, we have focused on the nature of the entity being a sub that would be in that would be an SME. We haven't limited it in any way in respect to the financial statements itself, you know, what kind they are. So I think that's why this combined issue does come up, although I don't know, you know, we may be talking about something that's a tenth of a percent of the population that may apply it. I think Martin's comments may be just a reminder to come back and think about how we articulate the scope of qualifying for the standard.
All right. Can I see who supports the staff final recommendation?
Ten.
Okay, that brings us to the end of this discussion. I propose we break until 10:50.